The early church practiced Sabbath. We know that from both from scripture and from early church history. And they quickly moved it from Saturday, the seventh day, to Sunday, because that was Resurrection Day. And so they moved the practice, and that's where we get away from the whole sundown Friday night to sundown Saturday night. Yeah. The early church adopted that Sunday would be a day of feast, a resurrection feast they would share together, and it was a big day for them in the rest of all that. And so all that to say, I don't think we're obligated to any kind of ceremonial keeping, but I do think we are obligated to understand the design and heart of the Lord for us to rest in Him, and that Jesus brings us into full fruition, that I can experience a spiritual rest mm-hmm. in the Lord when I stop and when I recognize Him, when I delight in Him. And the practice of doing that every day is important, but there is an extra benefit of doing it on a day where I don't have a whole lot that I need to do because I've cleared out my schedule and I'm just going to focus in on Him.
Shelton, welcome back onto the podcast.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. We are well on our way here in 2024.
Can't believe it. Yeah, I'm excited. Was that last year before Christmas? Was that?
I think we did a Christmas episode.
I think it was the last one.
I believe that's the last one that we had.
We've had some great episodes. I've enjoyed them.
Yeah. Always fun to have you on. For those who might not have seen Shelton before, he is the lead pastor at Paseo Del Rey Church here in San Diego. He's our pastor, Cindy and I, and our family. So always a privilege to have you on. And one of our slogans at End of the Harvest is living ancient faith in modern life. Mm. And we've been doing a series called The Hard Sayings of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to talk about perhaps the most ancient of practices. Mm-hmm. We can go all the way back to Genesis mm-hmm. 1 through 3. And we're going to talk about the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. What role the Sabbath plays in our lives as New Testament modern believers? Does it play any role? And some of this, just to give full disclosure here to those listening and watching, we as a church are doing John Mark Comer's Practicing the Way series, mm-hmm. and one of the practices that he has is Sabbath. So yeah. This is a relevant topic for us, but I think it's something that's going to be beneficial to all of our listeners.
Well, and one of the reasons I was eager to do it as well is because it has been a surprise to me at how hard this practice is, right? And so we're talking about the hard sayings of Jesus, and on the face of it, what Jesus says here, maybe to us, isn't all that hard, although it definitely would have been hard to the original hearers of the word. But it's not one of those that maybe I would have originally thought of with the hard sayings of Jesus.
Right.
But when it comes to employing what he says here and the practice of Sabbath,
yeah.
I've been surprised with our church folk and with my own family how difficult and yet how meaningful the practice of a regular Sabbath is. And so, John Mark Comer is kind of, I know a lot of churches that are walking through Practicing the Way stuff. He wrote a yeah. book that really resonated with many several years ago called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And just the title alone, I think, resonates with, I have three kids all in activities and my wife works and man, we're busy. We go yeah. and go and go and go. And so I first was turned on to Comer just by the title of that alone. And then I think the Lord has really been using his ministry in a neat way, originally up in Oregon and down. But as a church, our music pastor, our worship pastor, he's really an associate pastor. He went on sabbatical this summer and Sabbath became a very important and real need for him. And he and his wife kind of brought Comer back to my attention in all of this. So all that to say, I would highly recommend his book, particularly The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which is all on Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And so this practice as a church, we first start with Sabbath. And so I have had many questions from our church folk, and so I'll share this podcast out to them, and we're going to have we've just finished the growth group run, our small group run, where we have been focused in on Sabbath. And so we're going to have a Q&A as a church because a lot of questions coming out. So I'm excited to sit down in this format.
Right.
And because my suspicion is that if we're seeing that many questions within our folk, that at large, there's probably a lot of questions to be answered around it. And so hopefully we can take a stab at that and give some perspective to it. So I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah, this is part of a series that we're doing on the hard sayings of Jesus. So this is actually the second one that we've done.
Yeah.
If folks want, they can go back and listen to the first one that you and I did on Jesus's statement out of John 6, where he said, "You have to eat my flesh and drink my blood." Here we're going to be using the passage from Mark 2 as a launching point to talk about, like you said, perhaps this particular saying of Jesus is not the first one that would come to our mind in terms of a hard saying, but I do think the topic is a challenging one. So if you don't mind, maybe you could read for us from Mark chapter 2 here.
Yeah, and we can give it a little context. Jesus is with his disciples and he's walking through a grain field. Happens to be on Sabbath, Mark tells us. This is in Mark 2, verse 23. And he picks some grains of wheat there and assumably eats them. And man, the Pharisees, who are just waiting for him to do something wrong, see this and they immediately say, "Look, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Because evidently that was harvesting for Jesus just to be walking along and pick some wheat up in his hands. And so they have this conversation. Jesus confronts them about a story from the Old Testament with David. But the actual saying that we're going to focus on today comes in verse 27 and of chapter 2. And Jesus says to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." So Jesus calls himself Lord of the Sabbath. And then the story right after that is the story of Jesus healing someone on the Sabbath. And again, the Pharisees are really upset then. Luke really kind of follows along in his gospel the fight that they're really, I mean, Jesus doing work on the Sabbath was at the center of the Pharisees' frustration and anger and accusations against him. He must be unlawful because look at what he's doing.
Right.
And so we need to recognize how shocking of a statement to them that Sabbath was made for man, not man for Sabbath, and that Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. So that's our hard saying. What did he mean by that? And how do we apply what he means to our lives, right?
Well, what's interesting here, I think, is perhaps the saying even before this one is just as challenging, where he talks about David eating the bread that was only lawful for the priests to eat. And so I don't know if you want to dive into that just a little bit here, but I would simply say that you're right. Jesus, one of the things that he was constantly getting crossways with the religious leaders of his day was the way he approached and handled the Sabbath, you know, whether he was healing on the Sabbath or he was telling someone that he had healed to pick up his pallet, to carry his pallet. Mm-hmm. Here, I was doing a little bit of reading from F.F. Bruce. He's got this book on the hard sayings of Jesus, which, you know, is just a good reference point for us. Mm-hmm. But he talks about this particular passage in Mark 2. And, you know, when the disciples were plucking the heads of grain, it was considered a form of reaping. And then when they rubbed them together, it was a form of grinding. And so technically, these were aspects of working or breaking the Sabbath. And Jesus, rather than saying, no, this isn't really breaking the Sabbath, it's almost like he goes one step prior to that to say, hey, there are instances where in Scripture where the Sabbath was violated or a principle was violated, that David ate this bread that was only lawful. So the issue here is what's lawful. Like they said, it's unlawful. Your disciples are doing something that's not lawful to do on the Sabbath. And he goes to David and says, well, David did something unlawful. And that's the way it strikes me. Like, it's almost like when you're getting onto your kid for doing something wrong and their defense is that, well, brother did something wrong. And of course, as a parent, you're like, well, that's not an acceptable line of reasoning here. And then you're right. He wraps up by saying, that Well, two things. One is the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And we're going to dive into that here as we move forward. But then this other statement of the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Do you have any, I don't want to go too deep into this passage because we do want to kind of broaden the conversation around the Sabbath, but anything from this text in particular that you would want to share insights?
Meaning from the David section?
The David and, yeah, the whole line of reasoning there.
Yeah, I mean the pure irony there of the Pharisees accusing Jesus of being unlawful, right? Of the very one who and we're going to get it. You mentioned this earlier of Genesis 1:3, the very one who came up with the idea and as all things were made through him, Jesus was the one who rested on the seventh day, right? So he understood Sabbath on a level that the Pharisees never understood, and we'll take a look a little bit at the Old Testament. Really the Old Testament getting wrong and what the Pharisees got wrong about the Sabbath. And so what Jesus, I think, does there is that he doesn't just pick anybody. He picks the Pharisees, Michael Jordan of the Jews person, their hero, David, who they were quick to not talk about David's sin with Bathsheba or to look at David's down, but they were quick to elevate David. For them, David was the hero of heroes.
Right.
And so Jesus purposely, I think, chose David as his example of, don't you even know that David, your hero, did this? And so, which is similar to what he'll do when he heals on the Sabbath and they come and confront him. And he says, which one of you, if your donkey fell into a hole, wouldn't try to get your donkey out? And he's trying to point out their hypocrisy is where he's getting at. Of you guys want to talk about the law, but you're quick to make, you know, to justify unlawful when it fits your mindset and when it fits your paradigm of thinking. And so he's not making, I think, a principle about Old Testament versus New Testament as much as he's making a principle about their hypocrisy. He's making a point of their hypocrisy. So he is coming back around, and I think, I think we're with all of that. Then Jesus says, let's get out of the question of lawfulness.
Mm-hmm. Right,
that's not the issue when it comes to Sabbath. And some of the questions that I've gotten around Sabbath has been a question of, is it obligatory?
Right.
Right, right.
Which I do want us to dive into.
It's
one of the questions on the list here.
Because what we're getting down to that, is this a law? Is this a command?
Right.
Is this, and Jesus here is saying, and that we're going to apply this principle to when we have this conversation about whether Sabbath is obligatory, is that it's a gift. You're looking at this thing and approaching it totally wrong. Sabbath was made for man.
Yeah.
You guys have turned it into this thing that it was never meant to be, this obligation that you force onto people with all they had, man, they had all kinds of rules and type of rules and type of rules and type of rules. And he says, so now people feel like they're made for Sabbath, like they have to do this thing. And he says, and you guys have totally misunderstood that. And then for Jesus to then describe himself as Lord of the Sabbath, Lord of the rest.
Right.
And there's so much in that phraseology, right? I mean, famously, Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary, and I will give you rest. There is a Sabbath, the perpetual Sabbath rest in Jesus. But it's also, I think, a reference to heaven. To Hebrews talks about how heaven is this Sabbath rest that we will graduate into, and the new kingdom and a new heaven and the new earth and all of those things. So he is over this, and this is his kingdom, is a kingdom of restfulness in the Lord, in the finished work of the Lord. And so with that principle in mind, I think Jesus is inviting us to think about the Sabbath differently, right? Not as this lawful, obligatory, condemn people thing for, but as an invitation and a gift from the Lord that Jesus will one day bring into full fruition into our life. And so as worshipers of Jesus, it ought to be something that we long for and want to practice here and now, which I think is the principle moving forward.
Yeah. Right. There are some nuances, I think, in how Jesus answers this question. So one is you know, even within a legal system, there are laws that have priority. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus addresses this in another passage. I think it may be John 8, but it's definitely in John's gospel, John 7 or 8. Again, he's in trouble for doing something on the Sabbath. And in that case, he references the requirement to circumcise a male child on the eighth day.
Yeah.
And there he says, well, if it just so happens that a child is born and the eighth day lands on the Sabbath, then the priest breaks the law of the Sabbath by circumcising the child. And I think what Jesus is doing here is something similar, where he's saying you can't just approach scripture and God's words and instructions kind of as a on-off switch, like we have to keep the Sabbath, therefore they're eating grain, they're rubbing it. It's important to understand what God has revealed in its entirety, not just to take one command and try to keep all the commands, because sometimes even within the commands there's a need to understand.
Jesus will do this thing in the Sermon on the Mount that I love.
Yeah.
You have heard that it was said. And he will give a law and a command that we all agree on. But what he's saying is, it's not enough just to keep that.
Yeah.
I tell you, and then he gives the heart of it. And what he's doing is, God's not interested in us trying to keep the letter of the law. As followers, we should long for the heart of the law. And we need to be careful to say this. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus will say, don't think that the Son of Man has come to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law.
Right.
So Jesus is the fulfillment of the law. So however he's approaching this, this is the fulfillment. And so he will take a law like you've heard, thou shalt not murder. And Jesus teaches you shouldn't even hate. Like, let's get down into the heart of it. Like, you should forgive, commit adultery. Okay. I tell you, you shouldn't even lust in your heart. If you've already done that, you've committed. So he keeps driving his disciples farther and deeper to the principle behind all of it, the heart behind all of it.
Right.
So if you are a hate-filled person, but you've never murdered somebody, Jesus will say, you're guilty. You're guilty, right? Because your heart is hardened to the kingdom of God, right? If you are a lust-filled husband or wife, but you never had an affair on your wife, Jesus would say you're guilty, because your heart is not towards your spouse in purity and longing, right? And so what is the principle here? And I think what Jesus is teaching these Pharisees is, you guys can keep the absolute letter of the law, not cook anything on Sabbath and be belligerent about it, and still be guilty.
Yeah.
Because for you, it is not about resting in the Lord. It's not about honoring and glorifying God and his kingdom. If it was, then you would celebrate when somebody got healed. You would find joy in that.
Right.
You would see things differently. But as it is, you're just worried about the letter of the law. And so I think what Jesus is getting at here is driving us down. Hey, the Sabbath was made for man. This is a gift. And we'll see that throughout the Old Testament.
Yeah. And I think another point that he was making there was that they were missing him. So in their focus on the letter of the law here with the Sabbath, again, the reference to David, and here he is, the Son of Man, the Son of God, in their midst, that they're, again, there was another passage where they're asking Peter, hey, does your teacher pay the, I believe it's the temple tax. Does he pay the tax? And Peter, of course, he's defending Jesus. Like, of course he does. Peter comes in and Jesus asks him, you know, who do the kings of the earth collect taxes from, from their sons or from the citizens? Well, from the citizens. And Jesus' whole point is that, hey, I am above this tax. Like, I don't have to pay this tax. And I think there's a similar thing that he's doing here with, he's Lord of the Sabbath. He's the one who instituted it. But let's address the elephant in the room, which is, are we obligated to observe the Sabbath? Now, there are whole churches, the Seventh-day Adventists, that have built their entire denomination or their entire church, depending on how you view the Seventh-day Adventists. This is the centerpiece of their belief and their practice, is that they observe the Sabbath. For others of us, I grew up in a tradition which did not think twice about the Sabbath. We didn't practice it. We didn't promote it. It wasn't a big deal at all. In fact, there was, I would say, almost a condescension towards the Sabbath. Like, well, we don't have to keep the Sabbath because we're under the new covenant. Then people will say, well, it's one of the Ten Commandments. So do you feel like you have just because you're not under the old covenant, this isn't just a command from the Old Testament. This is one of the Ten Commandments, you know, to observe the Sabbath and to keep it holy. So help us navigate, big question here. Are we obligated as new covenant members of God's family to keep the Sabbath?
I think that question requires some definition. First, what is meant by obligated? And second, what is meant by keeping the Sabbath? Because that can mean different things for different people. Underlying that question is an understanding of what does it mean to be in the new covenant of in Jesus, under Jesus, not under the law, but under grace. But it's not a doing away with the law. It's that through Jesus, we now fulfill the law, right? Mm-hmm. And so the book of Hebrews really helps us unpack what is our relationship with the law now. And so historically, we see a division between the moral law and the ceremonial law, mm-hmm. right? And so we see this with Peter sitting on the rooftop. And ceremonially, he has never eaten anything that was unclean.
Right.
He had kept the law as a good Jew. And this, you know, big God gives him this vision of the sheep coming down, and there's all sorts of animals on the sheep that he would have been by the law guilty of eating, and God commands him to eat it. And it's just a vision. Hmm. And it's getting over to actually sharing the gospel with the Gentiles. But
right.
But there's a principle here in which Peter responds to God saying, I have never broken the ceremonial law. And God responds with, do not call unclean that which I have made clean. Mm-hmm. And so because God is giving this and whatnot. And so there's a sense there that we understand that Jesus has changed our relationship to the law now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We'll see that this battle comes back up in the book of Galatians when they are trying to demand that the Christians, the Gentile Christians, follow the law, that
right.
that they circumcise their kids, that they follow the new moon festivals and and all of the lawful thing. And Paul says that's not the gospel, right? None of us are saved through those things. We're only saved. And so he explains the gospel and that they're not obligated to keep the things of the law.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Carry that on. Colossians chapter 3. I think it's like 3, I wrote it down, 3:16. He is explaining the gospel to the church in Colossae to Gentiles. And he says, therefore, do not let anybody look down on you for what you eat or to judge you for what you eat or drink or for keeping, for how you don't keep the festivals, the new moons, right. and the Sabbaths.
Right.
He lists the Sabbath in there. Okay. What is going on there? From that verse, what can happen is that folks go, oh, well, we're not obligated to keep the Sabbath anymore because we're not under Paul saying this, that the gospel says that we're something different. And I think what we need to do is say, well, let's separate the ceremony from the moral. And John MacArthur famously will list the Ten Commandments and say that the keeping the Sabbath is the only one of those that is not morally driven. It's the only one that's ceremonially driven, and so we're not obligated like we are to the other nine. I don't see the separation there. I think it is at the core of a moral thing. And one of the reasons I see that is you can see this, and so we lots of different places, mm-hmm. and there's so many things I want to go to. First of all, if we'll come back to this. Remind me that I want to talk about it being a gift.
Okay,
we'll circle back around. But just in terms of it being a moral, one of my favorite prophet chapters of the entire Old Testament is Isaiah 58, and in Isaiah 58, Isaiah, our God through Isaiah, is confronting the worship of the people.
Right.
And he is saying, is it only for a day that you're called to fast? Mm-hmm. And is this the type of fast that God really wants? Like, you guys have completely right. misunderstood this.
Right.
And what he goes on to point out, because they're complaining that, hey, they're fasting, they're doing the ritual, the mm-hmm. ceremony, mm-hmm. and yet God is not blessing them. What goes? And so mm-hmm. like Jesus does in mm-hmm. the New Testament, Isaiah takes them to the heart of the issue. And Isaiah lists off for them the things that God is actually looking for. Okay. Mm-hmm. And everything on this list is extremely moral. He says, what good is it for you if you're fasting and yet your fasting ends in quarreling and strifes and you mistreat your employees? He said, then you're missing the heart of this whole thing, right? So you've done mm-hmm. the ritual, but you're mistreating. And he says, is it only for a day for a man to humble himself? And you can keep going. He says, is this not the kind of fasting that I choose? To loose the chains of injustice, to break the cords of the oppressed and set them free, to share your food with the hungry, and to provide for the poor wanderer in the shelter. And when you see a naked man, to clothe them. I mean, Isaiah is getting at you guys. Say you're religious and yet your heart looks nothing like God's. Like, you don't care about the poor and all these mm-hmm. things. So he is saying this is the religion that God really wants. So you just keep on reading in Isaiah 58. He says, do these things and then your light will break forth like the dawn. He keeps on going. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, this is verse 9. If you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed. And then he keeps on going. Verse 11, the Lord will guide you. Your people will walk through this. Well, here's what's interesting as you get into this, on this awesome list. Verse 13, if you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day as honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride and triumph on the heights of the land. Hmm. Like, that's a big statement, right?
Yeah.
And so what they were doing the ritual of Sabbath, mm-hmm. but then going and behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And so first Isaiah, God through Isaiah, addresses that they can't just go do as they please.
Right.
But then he brings it back to Sabbath and right. says, and if you keep from doing as you please and you call Sabbath a delight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is the heart of what Sabbath is. Now we're getting over to, and mm-hmm. the reason I bring this up, I think there is a moral component
mm-hmm.
to Sabbath.
Right.
Because in Leviticus, in Leviticus is called to Sabbath over yeah. and over. It'll use the words deny yourself.
Right.
This is Sabbath. It's the holy day. So deny yourself. Mm-hmm. And there is something about the practice of denying ourselves.
Yeah.
Giving a day set aside for the Lord.
Right.
Delighting in him that morally shapes us. Right. And so now we don't do yeah. that in ceremony. What Jesus mm-hmm. has gotten away with is that I don't need to do that practice with ceremony,
mm-hmm.
but I need to do it spiritually. So are we ceremonially mm-hmm. obligated to do all the stuff they would do on Sabbath? No.
Yeah.
But are we spiritually for the heart? I think so.
Well, this is, I hope folks like hung in there with you as you were moving through that, because I do think that people who have this question, in many cases, they're very sincere. They don't want, on the one hand, they don't want to not practice something if it's expected of them by God. And on the other hand, they don't want to demand that something be practiced under the new covenant if it isn't. And so my understanding is that Christ has, that we're no longer under the old covenant. And there are things that we read in the Old Testament, which is just another word for covenant. So when you read the Old Testament, you're reading about God's dealings with humanity, and in particular with his people Israel, through the covenant that he instituted through Moses. And Sabbath was a big deal. Like, there's a reason why it's a reason why they had gotten to the point where grabbing some grains of wheat and eating them was a question mark for some of them. I mean, there's a story in the Old Testament where a guy's picking up sticks for to make a fire on the Sabbath, and it's capital punishment. They execute, you know, at God's command, they stone this guy. So we need to acknowledge that in the Old Covenant, there was an obligation to practice this at the ceremonial level that does not carry over.
Yes.
Even though this is one of the Ten Commandments, it does not carry over into the New Covenant in terms of our requirement to observe it the way we see it being required in the Old Covenant.
Right. Yes, 100%.
So...
But this is where I keep going down. Let's get down into the heart of it. So what Jesus does is saying, what is the heart of it? What is it that Jesus gives us? And so before the covenant of the Ten Commandments and the ceremony then that was added on top of the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Before that ever came, Genesis 1 came.
Right. Yeah, I did a study years back, the seventh day, the Sabbath, and Sunday. Yeah. Because I think it's important to distinguish and discern the significance of those three things. You know, the seventh day we see from, well, Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Chapter 2 starts with the seventh day. And then you have the Sabbath being instituted by Moses on Mount Sinai as a requirement of observance for the nation of Israel.
Okay, back up, because before he does it as a requirement in Exodus 16, God is talking and God says, I am giving you Sabbath as a gift.
Yeah.
So then we get to Exodus 20 where he's now commanding it.
Right.
But what we need to see it first as, before it was ever a command, it was a gift.
Right. Well, this is one of those things where it's kind of like, if we could use fasting as maybe a parallel example, am I obligated to fast? I wouldn't say it that way. I would say there's great value in fasting. It's difficult. It's a challenge. But there's a blessing in fasting as well. There's a gift that comes to me when I fast. And so if we think about the Sabbath in a similar sense as a practice that God has given us, one, because of how we're designed, how he's created us in this world. But two, because of what it's going to bring to us when we practice it. So, I mean, man, we could go, like I say, there are entire churches that have been.
Well, yeah. And I think this gets back over to, what do you mean by observing it? Mm-hmm. Because what you mean by observing it is some legalistic approach of all these things that you cannot do, you can do, then you've missed the heart of it.
Right.
And we're not obligated to that.
Yeah. Well, we'll use the word practice because that's what we've been using in our church. And I think it maybe gets away from that idea of observing. So what does it mean that the Sabbath was made for man? Because I think this begins to get into the heart of this idea of Sabbath being a gift.
It is a gift. I think totally. So you think man was made on what day in the creation order? On the sixth day. And what happened the next day, man's first day into existence? God rested.
God rested from
his work. And so man was made, and his very first day of existence was into God's rest, God's completed work, which is such a beautiful thing. I mean, that is a beautiful thing of what we're called into. And now God will give him tasks. There are things that he's supposed to do when he creates man. He gives him this, hey, you're to do these things. Mm-hmm. But the very next day, it's a day of rest. Don't do those yet. First, rest. Rest in me. Tomorrow will come, and then we'll work. And so you look at the very fabric of the God in whose image we're created, right? Did God need to rest? Was God tired? Well, God's ability is limitless. God did not rest for himself, right?
Right.
I think he rested for man as a gift to man from the very beginning.
Right.
Long before sin came in and the whole need for commandments and law came in, right? You have this gift of Sabbath. If we look at it that way and say, man, this is God did this for us. In Exodus, once he's rescued them, he tells them, man, this is my gift to you. I'm going to give you the Sabbath, so don't collect. And so God would, on the day before Sabbath, God would rain down an extra amount of manna that would not go bad on the Sabbath, so they didn't have to collect on the Sabbath. And he said, this is my gift for you. At the end of Exodus, in Exodus 31, he says, and it's a sign. It's a sign for that you're mine, right? Mm-hmm. And later he will say in Deuteronomy, he says, this will help you not to forget, where you've been.
Right.
And you just see this day set aside of worshiping and delighting in God's, who God is and his creative work, what he has done, what he has provided.
Mm-hmm.
And if this rhythm, this one day rhythm out of seven, is woven into the fabric. And so when God is redeeming a people and he's making them back into his image, he says, hey, let's remember this. Let's keep this a holy practice. Now, no doubt, and why the whole reason I read that whole Isaiah 58 is that they misunderstood all of it. Sabbath is not, like, if you break Sabbath and you don't do it the way they did it, it's not some elevated thing that's unhealthy. So in the New Testament, then, there's a couple things we can say to it. First of all, I found this interesting because I was looking at, in the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24, when Jesus is kind of giving the, hey, God's going to be coming back and all these things. And he says in Matthew 24:20, when he's looking at the return of the day of the Lord, to his disciples, he says, and pray that it doesn't happen on Sabbath. So just stop right there.
Yeah.
That means Jesus expected that Sabbath would be a part of it. So what do we know then? Okay, so Jesus was alluding to a future thing. The early church practiced Sabbath. We know that from both from scripture and from early church history. Mm-hmm. And they quickly moved it from Saturday, the seventh day, to Sunday, mm-hmm. because that was Resurrection Day.
Right.
And so they moved the practice, and that's where we get away from the whole sundown Friday night to sundown Saturday night.
Yeah.
The early church adopted that Sunday would be a day of feast, a resurrection feast they would share together, and it was a big day for them in the rest of all that. And so all that to say, I don't think we're obligated to any kind of ceremonial keeping, right? But I do think we are obligated to understand the design and heart of the Lord for us, to rest in him, and that Jesus brings us into full fruition, that I can experience a spiritual rest in the Lord when I stop and when I recognize him, when I delight in him. And the practice of doing that every day is important, but there is an extra benefit of doing it on a day where I don't have a whole lot that I need to do because I've cleared out my schedule and I'm just going to focus in on him. And so I don't know if I got into your question. That's a gift for man.
Yeah.
Man's not made for that. I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Well,
we're practicing it. Like we said, we are practicing the Sabbath as part of a larger series that we're doing on discipleship this year with our church. I did find it interesting that this was the first practice that they wanted us to lean into. And I had shared this with you, I think, offline a few days ago, that if this had been floated to me 2 years ago, I would have been pretty resistant to the idea of practicing the Sabbath, just because of my background and my understanding of, well, we don't have to practice the Sabbath. That's not a new covenant thing. But where I'm at today, I would say, hey, this is an opportunity. One, it's built into God's design, that there's something about the creation sequence of 6 days and then a day of rest. And then we see it reinforced in Exodus, like you mentioned. But probably the biggest selling point, to be honest, is not doctrinal. It's a recognition that in my own life, I am harried. I'm just, I'm going here and there. I'm overwhelmed. There's never really a time of rest, of enjoyment, of reflection, that it's very easy. And again, going back to learning to practice an ancient faith in modern time, I think the Sabbath is one of those practices that God has given to us to help us combat the way that modern life erodes our discipleship. It erodes our faith. just by keeping us distracted, keeping us overwhelmed, keeping us tired. It's very hard to follow Jesus when that's your norm, when you're just day in and day out, you're just going, going, going. And so I was at a place, I think both Cindy and I were at a place to say, hey, we don't feel like we have to practice this out of a sense of ceremonial obligation, but we need this. Like we think this could actually benefit us in some unique ways. And along these lines, I wish that I was a more disciplined person. Like when it, let's just take diet.
Bro, you're one of the most disciplined people I know. Like how many miles did you run this morning? Shut up.
I didn't run any today. But go with me on this. I wish that I could just in the moment eat healthy. Make a good choice, you know? Like there's a slice of cake there and there's some celery stalks. I wish that on a regular basis I could just make good choices. But what I found is that that's really hard to do. So here's what I found with fasting, and I typically do intermittent fasting just on a regular basis. Over the past month and a half, I've been doing more extended fasting. And what I have learned is that, at least for me, there is tremendous value in having an on-off switch to say, on this day, I'm not eating anything. I'm not drinking any calories. I'm not eating any calories. Now, this has, in a sense, I do think there's spiritual benefit to this, but this is more me just trying to be healthy. But the principle, I think, carries into our spiritual lives as well, that there is benefit to times of withdrawal and just, like you said, blocking out these periods of time where we're purposely going to take a step back. And that is what Sabbath has been for me over the past 6 weeks as we've been trying to practice it in earnest. So maybe that's part of why God gives it to us. Maybe that's one of the ways that it is a gift, because I wish that we could just go Monday through Sunday and take little periods of time where we withdraw and we reflect on the Lord and we rest and we reset. But the reality for most of us is that it's very difficult to do that. And so to have a period of time where every 7 days you purposely do that, and it's going to happen because you're making it a priority. It's been very eye-opening to me, the way that it's benefited me just in my personal life.
Such a keen insight, right? And that's one of the things we have to switch over in our mind. Like the whole question of, am I obligated to?
I get to do this.
Like think about that. Think about God in heaven saying, I'm giving you a gift.
Yeah.
And you're questioning, am I obligated to open this gift?
But it's so hard because, again, we started with Sabbath, and I think I told you, like, you're asking me to lead this growth group on Sabbath. Like, okay, but, and I told the folks who were part of our growth group that I am the, I'm the student in here who needs this the most.
Oh, aren't we all?
So we're going to learn together because it's hard, and it was hard for the Old Testament people of God.
Oh, sure.
It was very hard just to stop.
And they didn't really succeed at it.
No, well. They got in a lot of trouble over the centuries because they weren't doing it.
And I think that's ultimately like, hey, God knows me better than I know myself. Right?
Yes, exactly.
And I am called to deny myself. We see Jesus regularly pulling away from the crowds, resting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And choosing to do that and inviting his disciples, hey, come away and rest with me.
Yeah.
And rest is important. So here's what I would say to somebody that says, I don't need to do Sabbath. I don't need that.
Right.
The only theology that really matters is your practical theology. According to Jesus, Jesus says it's the one that hears these words of mine and puts them into action. He's the wise builder. So we can profess to believe quite a bit. So I can profess to believe that Jesus is the Lord of rest, that he invites me, hey, come. How am I putting that into my life as a regular practice that I'm resting in Jesus?
Yeah.
Because, and I mean really resting, is reading my Bible and praying at the end of a night Good? Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But here's the reality. After a long day of work, my right. mind going, running to different, I mean, tonight when we're done, I've got soccer practice. I got to go pick up yep. a grocery order. I got to make dinner.
Right.
I mean, we're going. I think we got some volleyball practice stuff happening. And, you know, that's just tonight. That's every day. It's not restful.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the night, I pray. I spend some time with the Lord. I try in the morning to start that. But they're just the practical nature of it. It's yeah. not restful.
Right.
So if I think the Lord is the Lord of the Sabbath, of rest, the Lord of rest, then where am I practically putting that into play?
Hmm.
It used to be that our culture, and you grew up in a more rural setting as well. Yeah. It used to be that our culture propped us up in this. This is why right. I think our theology around Sabbath is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, man, where I grew up, there's nothing to do on a Sunday.
Right.
A lot of the grocery stores weren't even yeah. open on a Sunday, you know, and, yeah. and restaurants wouldn't be open. And so we came home and we rested. And it wasn't necessarily because we had any kind of theology in it, but culture, but it was nice. Man, I had memory. My parents would just mm-hmm. make a bowl of popcorn and we would sit and eat some popcorn and just hang out and yeah. not do much on a Sunday. And that used to be the culture at large. Well, culture now has blown right past that. And Sunday's just as busy as any other day. My kids will have, if we allow them to go, there's sporting practices, there's all these things. So what I think happened is that we became dependent upon the culture's rhythm.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we're just going the flow of the culture.
Yeah.
And so what I'm finding pastorally mm-hmm. and personally is, mm-hmm. is, man, I'm exhausted by going with the culture.
Yeah.
And culture at large is exhausted. The stats on mental health struggles are through the roof.
And let's be honest, our churches have really imbibed a lot of the larger culture 100%. In terms of activity, busyness.
Yes. Our all the things we're doing for yep. all the ages needing to be a part of. And so what happens, what I think then has happened is that we've stopped being countercultural and we've stopped
right.
resting. And,
right.
and we didn't have that muscle developed from a theological standpoint. Or
yeah.
And so when it went away as a crutch, we just stopped doing it totally. And so this feels radical when it probably shouldn't feel radical, well, right?
But it is, and it's definitely radical in the context of modern life and in our culture. I looked for this quote because it's such a good one, and I'm going to butcher it. But the point, and this was not a religious thinker, but it was more of a modern day philosopher. I think it was Naval Ravikant, but he basically says that if you learn how to discipline yourself and utilize all the things that modern life gives you, then life has never been better. But if you just go with the flow and get caught up in all that modern life provides for you, your life will be terrible. Because if you think about it, you know, for most of us, we could eat as much as we want. Like, there's no shortage of food. If you can't discipline yourself and eat in a healthy way, you're actually not going to be healthy, even though you could. Like, there's never been a more optimal time maybe in the history of the world where you could be healthy. Like, we understand food better than we have access to it. But the problem is we have all of it that we want and we overeat. Same thing with information. Like, there's never been a better time if you wanted to study a topic and learn and you know, self-educate. Or you can just browse social media mm-hmm. over and over and your life will be terrible. So I think, again, bringing this back to practical theology, that Sabbath is one of these things. I think the two largest challenges we face as American Christians when it comes to devotion to Jesus, living a life of devotion to Jesus, one, I think, is distraction. We have a very hard time being present. Just being in the moment, being with someone,
yeah.
slowing down. I think that is one of our big challenges, is that we've just become a distracted people. Reading our Bible, sitting down for 15 minutes and reading the Bible, that's a challenge for a lot of us because we're so used to getting input, you know, getting some sort of dopamine hit. And you read the Bible, maybe the dopamine hit doesn't come as frequently as mm-hmm. if you're scrolling social media. So I think one is distraction, that is one of our biggest challenges. And then second is just busyness. We have no space mm-hmm. in our lives. And what I've begun to see Sabbath doing is address both of those challenges and both of those deficiencies in my life. It's a purposeful way of creating space in life. And I think one of the most surprising outcomes is that I'm remembering how to be present. Mm-hmm. One, I'm present in that moment because part of what we do is we do no screens.
Yeah.
I turn the phone off. There's no computer. There's no Netflix. There's no TV. And man, that's a challenge. Mm-hmm. I've been reading a lot more the last month or so. But I've also been having meaningful conversations that we just haven't had in our family for some time because you could be present, and if everyone else is distracted, you're not going to have a conversation. So you have to create this space where you can actually be present and then to slow down and to not be so busy. It's been a challenge, but I would say for sure it's been worth it so far.
I think saying no can be a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
A beautifully spiritual practice, right?
Yes.
And we say yes to a whole lot. And to your point, to develop a muscle of hey, on this day I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no to. I found myself, and I'd love to hear what does it look like as you've tried to practice it. I'll be honest, our family, I just got back from a trip from Africa.
Right.
Then I got sick. Kids are in it. Like we haven't been able to be part of the growth group. We haven't been able to, and it has been a struggle. Like, so I feel guilty in all of this.
I don't think you should feel guilty. I think it's like, hey, that blessing is ahead of you.
And which is kind of what I'm getting to. So how does my approach to all of this? When I see it as a gift,
right?
As a gift that God takes very seriously. Mm-hmm. He says this is a life or death issue. Like take this gift seriously. Then when I miss it, it's not a sense of, I shouldn't feel a sense of guilt like God is mad at me.
Right.
But like I've missed out on something that God has given me for my soul. The Holy Spirit can bless me. And so a couple of weeks ago, I was able to, after getting over being sick, I took a nap for the first time on a Sunday afternoon. So for us, Sabbath really starts Saturday night and goes to Sunday night, right? And so Sunday morning, waking up, and as a preacher, this is interesting.
I was going to say, this is tough, because is it restful for you when you're...
But here's the thing. I've wrestled with this. Guess when Jesus did most of his teaching in the synagogues?
On the Sabbath.
On the Sabbath. Regularly read the Gospels. I mean, that's what he does. He went into the Sabbath and taught. And when Paul did in Acts, and you just do a word search on Sabbath, and nearly every appearance on Sabbath
in the New Testament,
that's Paul's going there,
right?
And so, I've gotten over that in my mind of actually, if Sabbath is not so much just about rest, but about delighting in God's completed work, then worship together with my church family and celebrating the word. What I've had to do then is to be better prepared by the time I leave the office on Friday. So that Sunday doesn't feel like this rush, I have to get up. Saturday night doesn't feel like I'm cramming, beforehand. So that has caused me, to be more present and ahead of time. And my kids have struggled with that. Like, they had to get their homework. If they're truly going to rest on Sunday, then they've got to get their homework done. And we failed yesterday. Yesterday evening, we were doing science fair project. My youngest had procrastinated. I'm like, okay, we got to get it done.
Whatever. Right.
But
right.
What I'm trying to teach the kids in our conversations for us is, hey, but our goal, what we need to long for is because my oldest, he's in high school. We have conversation about how tired he is.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And how much he has to do.
Right.
And I've been in student ministry for a long time. Students constantly feel overwhelmed by their, and so the ability to give them a space and time where you don't have to do any of that.
Yeah.
And so for us yesterday, my advice to my son is, I hear that you have a lot that you got to get done, but I still think it would be wise. How about we just take the 4 hours after church, 4 or 5 hours after church. Let's go get a meal. Let's rest. And you just don't do anything for those hours. And I think you'll be more present for when you need to do the work. And not exhausted. So for us, it really looks like that Sunday I didn't turn on any sporting events, you know, which is a big deal for me.
Yeah. You know,
I can let Sundays, it helps, it's not football season. Well, come talk to me again in October, see if I'm doing. What does it look like for you? What is it?
Yeah, so this is some of what we're, one, I love the idea of practicing because we're practicing in the sense that there's action involved, but we're also practicing in the sense that we're learning. So, and that there's a lot of freedom there to say, hey, we don't have it figured out, but we're going to try some things and we're going to practice this every week. So hopefully we're going to get better at it. Some things that have worked for us, we tried to find a time that is a natural opportunity in our week. And so for us, most recently, we've basically started on Friday evenings. Okay. We do our growth group on Friday evening. So when everyone leaves, it's later in the evening, maybe 8 or 9 o'clock when we start the Sabbath. And then we have yet to do a full 24-hour period. Yeah, so yeah. I want folks to hear that too, that to practice the Sabbath, you can grow into this. So for us, the first time we basically did it from 9 p.m. on Friday night through noon on Saturday. Of course, we were sleeping most of that. So it was kind of an easy way to sort of ease into staying off screens and purposely directing our attention to the Lord. We've extended that a little bit. We've tried to increase it a few hours each week as we've grown into that. The other thing that I would encourage people to do is we light a candle.
You do?
Yeah. We do light a candle at the beginning. And at first that felt cheesy. It felt sort of, I don't know.
I haven't done it.
Well, what I like is it's kind of like a gun going off at the start of a race. Yeah. So like we know when we light the candle, okay, we have officially started this period of time. And that's been helpful because otherwise... it can just be kind of a gray area. So for us, I think you could do almost anything. Lighting a candle is an easy thing to do. And it's something that John Mark Comer and his group encouraged. So once I sort of understood it that way, it was good. It kind of gives a very clear start and a very clear finish time. We basically light the candle and we spend the first 5 to 10 minutes just reflecting back on the week. What we're grateful for. And that's sort of a starting point for us. It's about a 10 minute thing. We don't make it a huge deal. So those are some practices that we've been doing over the past month. I'm excited to continue doing it. It's definitely something that I want to do, not just as part of this particular round of growth groups, but more and more, I want this to be a regular practice in my life of faith.
A discipline. And I think the important thing is to keep looking at it like an invitation from the Lord.
Yeah.
An invitation to deny yourself. An invitation to stop.
Yes.
But, you know, a couple weeks ago, I woke up from that nap and my kids were all resting. And I just went out for a bike ride. And I wanted to turn on screen. I think I turned on TV and felt a little conviction. So I turned off TV and I thought... I've been thinking about taking a bike ride for a while. I haven't done it. I just got my bicycle back from the shop. And so I thought, you know, and it wasn't an exercise thing. I wasn't.
Right.
It was a slow, I'm just going to mosey along. I put some worship music on. It was at sunset on Sunday evening. So I just got to watch the sunset down.
Right.
And I put some worship music in my ears and I was just singing, riding down these trails. I had no clue where I was. I had to pull out my phone at the end of it to like, figure out how to get back home.
And
it was so restful. And what was interesting in that is I was physically doing something.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most spiritual restful. It would be a memorable thing for me for a while to watch the sunset. I just pause and watch that sun go down and sing into the Lord. It was just a purely delighting. And for us, you got to think Jesus's culture, they were probably outside the majority of their life.
Right.
Right. Walking, doing that, they spend a ton of time. We don't spend time in God's creation much at all.
Yeah.
And so
agreed.
There and so screens dominate us inside. And so there was something about being outside as part of the Sabbath.
Absolutely. I think that's one of my priorities is to try to be outdoors as much as possible. And of course we're in San Diego, so some of our listeners are gonna be like, hey, it's March.
We're
not going outside.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is like even though we're in San Diego, you can just find yourself, you know, you're distracted on a screen and missing out on, and that's the biggest thing is like, what are we missing out on because we're so caught up in this modern rhythm of life where you're just go, 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 one thing to the next, cramming. And that used to be my picture of the good life, is squeezing every last bit out of every minute. And because I'm type A, that means action, like activity, and just and production, like being productive with each moment as much as possible. And, you know, I love that. So here's the thing, like, I enjoy that, which makes purposely taking a step back, it really is an act of faith on my part to say, I believe that God has something better if I step outside of what feels right for me as a person, to trust that this time of rest, this time of resetting, and redirecting my attention on Him actually will lead me to the good life that He's promising. And here's another thing that, these are just like Andrew's weird head. It helps me to think about, I'm working at the Sabbath. I'm working at learning how to practice Sabbath. Like, this is a challenge. And so, of course, the way I'm approaching it is a little bit different, but that's been helpful. And then the other thing is that the scriptures actually say, you know, 6 days you've been given to do work. And so for us type A's, hey, this is actually giving you another work day. You don't have to do a weekend. You can work 6 days, and God's just asking you to take a break for one. So even just having permission to, like, okay, I can work really hard for 6 days, and that's okay. Like, God actually endorses that. He's blessing that. He's asking me to trust Him to withdraw, to abstain on this seventh day. So, well, there's a lot more that we could say, and we always go long, brother. Any final words that you want to share with our listeners today?
Man, I'm sitting here thinking, for discipling somebody else.
Yeah.
And where does Sabbath come in when I'm discipling somebody else and helping them discover and know Christ as Christ desires? And I think that Sabbath needs to be a part of that conversation, of a rest of that. And I imagine, you know, Jesus understood that part of the hurt that the world feels apart from Him is a hurried restlessness. So His invitation to them is, come to Me, all who are weary, and I'll give you rest, right? What's interesting is Jesus said that to a Jewish community who practiced Sabbath.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Sabbath in and of itself, the practice of it, isn't what makes it restful. Because Jesus wouldn't have offered to give rest to a community that it is delighting in Jesus.
Yeah.
In the practical nature of practicing and observing a Sabbath says, hey, I'm going to set aside a day where I'm not focused on anything else, where Jesus isn't an addition into my day.
Right.
He isn't something I'm trying to squeeze in at the end and hours, but He's what I focus on all day long. And whether that's taking a nap, but thanking Him for that nap and resting in Him and giving myself permission, saying, God, You've made today a restful day. Thank You for that. Right. Or whether that's worshiping in church, which I think should be a part of your practice of being in the Word, you know, whatever that looks like, but it's Christ oriented, thanking Him for His completed work all day long. Should we do that every day? Yes. But where is there a day in my week where that's keyly what I'm focused on all day? Well, think about that becoming a part of your rhythm. And if you're discipling somebody, helping them understand, hey, Jesus gives us rest, and I want to invite you into where can you look like right now? If you can't give me 24 hours, can't do it for 20, I totally understand that. But what's an extended, devoted, rhythmic time in your life where, I mean, you can just rest in the completed work of Jesus and let your heart be thankful for that all day long? And so that invitation, when we disciple somebody, I think is just as appetizing to the ears today as it was when Jesus spoke them to His community, right? And I think for us, that needs to be what our goal for a Sabbath is. It's not just about resting and sleeping and all that.
Right, yeah.
It's about delighting in Christ, what Christ has done.
We're going to provide resources, links in the show notes here. If you're watching on YouTube, down in the video description. I think practicing the way John Mark Comer and this practice in particular, he does a great job, or they do a great job of providing a holistic understanding of Sabbath, where it's yeah. not just taking a nap, you know? They actually break it down into the four movements is what they call it. So it's stop, rest, delight, and worship. Mm-hmm. And all of those are part of learning to practice the Sabbath. Some weeks we're going to need to lean into one of those movements, perhaps more than others, but they're all part of it. But I hope this has been encouraging for you who are listening, who are watching. And you may be where I was 2 years ago. If so, you're probably not still listening, which is okay. But if you have always been curious about the Sabbath, and especially if you feel like, I want to follow Jesus, I want to spend more time in the scriptures, I want to experience this rest that he's promising, and I can't figure out how to do it. I think the resources and hopefully this conversation will be a starting point for you to begin to explore the practice of Sabbath as a way of developing and cultivating that type of life. So, Shelton, thanks again for coming on, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to have done it. And man, and this is a work in progress, I think, for both of us as we think about Sabbath on a more disciplined level.
Maybe the next time you come on the show, however, whenever that is, it's typically every 2 or 3 months, we'll just have a little snippet of how's it going with the Sabbath for both of us because this is something that I don't want to just do for a short period and then lose track of.
Sounds good to me, man.